ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, host of Politics Now, the ABC's podcast unpacking the latest political news. Every week you'll hear me and the sharpest political minds at the ABC.
Ritual humiliation at which everybody laughs and pretends to be entertained by Donald Trump. That's on the Trump bingo card.
So join me for Politics Now on the ABC Listen app.
The United States has deployed 15,000 troops and sent warships to the Caribbean in the biggest military build-up there since the Cuban Missile Crisis. It follows months of deadly US strikes on boats from Venezuela, it says, are smuggling drugs. Today, Latin America expert Orlando Perez from the University of North Texas on why Donald Trump is turning up the pressure on Venezuela's president and why toppling him won't be easy. I'm Sydney Peed on Gadigal Land, Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Orlando, you've been watching these rising tensions between the US and Venezuela over the past few months. There's been a lot of saber-rattling going on, and it's got to the point where there's even talk now of an attempt to overthrow the Venezuelan government. It's just extraordinary times.
Yes. Well, what stands out here is not just the naval presence, but the pattern. So more than 20 lethal strikes on boats in the Caribbean and Eastern Pacific. Over 80 people have been killed.
Venezuelans say they're feeling anxious about the possibility of U.S. military action as tensions escalate between the two nations.
The Trump administration has carried out more than 20 strikes on alleged drug boats in the Pacific and the Caribbean, arguing they pose a threat to Americans.
All you have to do is look at the cargo that was, like, it's spattered all over the ocean. Big bags of cocaine and fentanyl all over the place.
And now a carrier-led strike force is off the Venezuela coast, right? So that seems much less like routine counter-narcotics, which is how the mission has been framed so far, and more like an infrastructure for a broader coercive campaign against the Venezuelan government, the Maduro-led government. This really breaks, I think, with decades of practice by the United States. It encourages military solutions to law enforcement problems. And it increases the likelihood that an operation branded as counter-narcotics could easily slide into regime change through escalation.
These tensions, they've sort of culminated in quite a tense phone call that took place between the two leaders on November 21st, in which Trump reportedly gave the Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro an ultimatum to leave Venezuela.
The New York Times reported that you had a phone call with Maduro. Did you?
I don't want to comment on it. The answer is yes.
Would you say it went well?
I would say it went well or badly. It was a phone call, yeah.
Through the reporting, it appears that it was a fairly short meeting. Maduro reportedly offered to leave Venezuela if he, his family, and I think more than 100 officials of the regime received full amnesty. All U.S. sanctions would be lifted. An ICC case that's been building against him was dropped. He also wanted his vice president, Delcy Rodriguez, to oversee an interim government prior to holding new elections. Trump apparently refused most of those demands and, according to some accounts, gave Maduro a one-week window to leave with safe passage. That 1 week has come and gone, so we're into the second week since the call.
Now U.S. forces are building up in the Caribbean, and Trump says the airspace over Venezuela should be considered closed. It all looks very ominous. What does it tell you about the Trump administration's intentions here?
I think the buildup provides options that go well beyond shooting at small boats, right? So it gives the United States the ability to hit air defense sites, command and control nodes and regime targets inside Venezuela. And in fact, the president has been hinting for weeks that the next stage is going to be land strikes on drug trafficking targets.
I can say this. I want those boats taken out. And if we have to, we'll attack on land also, just like we attack on sea. And there's very little coming in by sea. I think we've knocked out over 90% of it.
But we know that some of those drug trafficking cartel targets might be linked to the regime. So any inland strike could go beyond simply targeting drug trafficking. From a planner's perspective, this is how you prepare for escalation to regime change. So at a minimum, it's coercive signaling. At maximum, it's the early phases of a campaign that could move inland with kinetic strikes on Venezuelan territory.
Before we look at what could be on the horizon, let's step back just for a moment. I want to talk about these drug boats, because these tensions have been building since the US started striking those boats in early September. The Trump administration insisted they were drug terrorists, and so far at least 80 people have been killed. Legal scholars say these are extrajudicial killings. So what have we seen happen here?
Yes. So there's three layers, I think, to this. So first, the UN special rapporteurs and legal scholars have already, as you said, called several of these attacks extrajudicial executions, arguing that drug trafficking, even at scale, does not create an armed conflict that would justify treating everyone on those boats as combatants. Second, the Coast Guard's own record shows why using suspicion alone as a basis for lethal force is so problematic. Around one-fifth to one-quarter of interdicted, quote, suspected drug boats, close quote, in recent years had no drugs on board. If that's your false positive rate, then a policy of blowing up every suspect vessel implies that some of the dead will not in fact be traffickers. So third, the September 2nd strike and at least one subsequent follow-up strike reportedly involved a double strike, right? A targeted survivors in the water. That is precisely the kind of act that the Pentagon's own law of war manual treats as illegal.
The U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, he's under a lot of scrutiny now, but the White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt insists it was legal.
The strike conducted on September 2nd was conducted in self-defense to protect Americans in vital United States interests. The strike was conducted in international waters and in accordance with the law of armed conflict.
It's interesting because I think both Trump and particularly the Secretary of Defense Hegseth have tried to blame Admiral Bradley, the Special Forces Strike Force commander here, that he made the decision and that he was authorized to make the decision.
I watched that first strike live. As you can imagine, at the Department of War, we got a lot of things to do. So I moved on to my next meeting. A couple of hours later, I learned that that commander had made the, which he had the complete authority to do. And by the way, Admiral Bradley made the correct decision to ultimately sink the boat and eliminate the threat.
But Admiral Bradley is a very thoughtful military leader with a long record. And it's hard for me to believe that he would have approved the double tap without explicit authorization from the Secretary of Defense, and maybe even higher. They are in legal hot water.
All right, Orlando, let's try and understand what's at stake here. Just tell me what we need to know about Nicolas Maduro and how he's led Venezuela. What's life like for Venezuelans at the moment?
So Maduro presides over a deeply authoritarian, highly securitized system that has been coup-proof. The regime has basically layered the regular armed forces, the National Guard, intelligence agencies, and paramilitary so-called colectivos into a web of mutual surveillance and shared criminal rents. Senior officers are tied into illicit economies, from gold mining to smuggling to drug logistics. So add to that a humanitarian collapse and one of the largest displacement crises in the world, with about 8 million Venezuelans already abroad, any external use of force in this environment is acting on this landscape, which is a fragile society, a hardened security elites, and irregular armed groups entrenched in the border areas and in urban neighborhoods. And this is a real difficult before and after picture.
And you've written that if, and it's a big if, U.S. troops were to go into Caracas, the capital of Venezuela, to topple Maduro, it wouldn't be a weekend mission.
Right.
What capabilities does Maduro have, and what force would the U.S. need to get rid of him?
A minimally credible invasion and stabilization force starts at 50,000, and it probably builds from there. If you decapitate the regime, you're going to inherit a fragmented security ecosystem. You're going to have paramilitary forces. You're going to have pieces of the intelligence services that are embedded with Cuban intelligence officers, Russian FSB. You have criminal networks, both drug trafficking and other illicit networks. You have Colombian guerrilla factions that operate from Venezuelan territory and do not answer to Caracas. You risk insurgencies. This would be a multi-year stabilization effort and billions of dollars.
Mm. And of course, the U.S. has done this before. We've seen this in Iraq. The U.S. got rid of Saddam Hussein, and what followed was just absolute bloody chaos for U.S. troops and the local population. And so it's quite worrying to think about what would happen if the U.S. tried to make that move.
Absolutely. And I would not say that Venezuela would be the same as Iraq and Libya. The societies are different. The social divisions, the ethnic divisions are not there that were present in Iraq and Libya. But I think there are enough risks that you need a long-term plan. And I don't think there is a long-term plan or strategy beyond the narco-terrorist framing at the moment. Mm.
What do you think the U.S. will do next? Are airstrikes or drone strikes more likely than an actual invasion?
Yes, I think an actual invasion with boots on the ground is not very likely at this point. I think militarily the United States can defeat the Venezuelan armed forces if it comes to that. But the hard part is the scale and cost of doing it in a way that produces a stable outcome.
Well, Trump would ideally want Maduro to step down voluntarily, but given that he has said that his supporters are ready to defend the country and called US actions aggression and psychological terrorism, it seems unlikely that that will happen. But Orlando, I want to understand a little bit more why Trump is intervening in Venezuela in this way and potentially trying to oust its leader through force. What's happening here? Is it really just, as he says, a war on illegal drug flows into the US, or is it about something else?
I think there's several things. The poison flowing into the United States. The problem is that the underlying data do not support the drug narrative. Venezuela as the central node in the US drug crisis, right? So fentanyl from Mexico and cocaine production from Colombia are much worse. Oil and regional power are the quieter motives, I think. The other angle is that some in Washington see an opportunity to reshape the Western Hemisphere's balance of power by removing a regime that is aligned with Russia and Cuba and China. And so they see this as an opportunity to get rid of the government that they oppose.
Obviously, there are huge international ramifications for these kinds of moves. But what about domestically? President Trump is meant to be America first. His supporters are somewhat isolationist. Trump's railed against so-called forever wars, vowing to get America out of conflicts overseas. So why would he be going down this path?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It's very interesting. And there's a real tension within the MAGA, the Make America Great Again political movement. MAGA contains both a very strong anti-war, as you said, no more forever wars group and current that supported Trump because of his promise to end never-ending wars, but it also includes an aggressive, punitive group and strand that favors using force against perceived enemies, like cartels, and particularly like socialist regimes. The administration, I think, is trying to square that circle by framing actions against Venezuela not as a foreign war, but as a forward extension of border enforcement and the drug war. But I think domestic opinion really sets a hard ceiling here. The gap between the rhetoric and the reality is where bad decisions get made.
Orlando Perez is a professor of political science at the University of North Texas in Dallas. Audio production for this episode by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sydney Peed. ABC News will be back again on Monday. Thanks for listening.